Welcome back to the Martial Arts Show 2.0. I'm your podcast host Khalid, and my guest today is Rachel Greenbaum, and we talk about her Krav Maga training, the bout back, and many, many more things, so stay tuned.
Start, tell people quick who you are and a little bit about your background.
Okay, my name is Rachel Greenbaum. I'm a martial artist. I have a black belt in Krav Maga. And previously to COVID, anyway, I managed an international licensing company for Krav Maga. So I'm currently the only training instructor. I'm the master trainer. And I competed at the U.S. Women's Nationals Boxing Championship in 2004, and I was ranked 6th in the U.S.
Well, that's very impressive.
Thank you.
I'm assuming there were a lot of athletes, a lot of women competing probably, so it's definitely a big achievement.
There were a lot of athletes competing. It was actually the year before they joined together, the male and female competitors. Of course, they were still competing within their own sex, but the competition was held simultaneously the year right after I competed.
Well, that's definitely very, very impressive. How many years do you train martial arts in general now? Or what age did you start?
Actually, as a child, I was a competitive figure skater and a ballerina, and I started doing martial arts when I was 19. I started doing just a heavy bag kickboxing class, and I became an instructor pretty shortly after that. So that was a long time ago. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but it was a while ago. And then I started training in Krav Maga. Well, had a progression. I competed at the U.S. Women's Nationals Boxing Championship in 2004, and that was right after I had started training in Muay Thai, which is the first time that I ever actually hit pads or trained with an actual boxing coach. And I loved it, and I kickboxer, so it was interesting competing in boxing. And then shortly after that competition, I ended up starting to learn Krav Maga. So I began Krav Maga and I've worked my way up over those years and achieved my black belt in 2016.
Well, it's definitely a long road you had. And can you tell people maybe a little bit about the heavy bag kickbox training, or is it just a course? Because I'm assuming people, when they hear kickboxing, they think about like kickboxing with all the techniques, sparring and fighting. Is there a difference, or is it just called that way?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that? I'm so sorry. There was a little bit of
distraction. Okay. I said, because you said with the heavy bag kickboxing class, was it just then on a heavy bag kickboxing, or it's the same like normal kickboxing with partner drills, sparring, and fight preparation?
Okay, so the kickboxing class that I began teaching was just regular kickboxing. And now my program, Strike Fit, we haven't reinvented the wheel by any means, but it's just a very well put together program. We do a lot of partner drills. We train always in both stances. We build a combination slowly and then put it together. And we take them off the bag with different bodyweight movements. And then also we incorporate dumbbells, medicine balls, kettlebells, and other equipment sometimes as well.
So it's not just kickboxing fitness class like a lot of gym owners have. So it's like regular hardcore kickboxing, so everybody would feel
definitely a hardcore. It's an hour-long class. It's definitely a calorie burner, But what really makes us stand out, other than training in both stances, is that everything is based on Krav Maga. All the stance, all the movement, all the striking is based in Krav Maga. So you're learning a real skill.
So you mix it up with also groin kicks, punches to the throat, and eye pokes, or do you leave that out?
It's hard to train groin kicks on a heavy bag, so no.
Know what I mean with partner, when you do the partner drills?
No, because we don't strike each other. It's considered a fitness class, so even though okay. we incorporate a lot of elements of Krav Maga, it's strictly a fitness class.
Okay, good. And do you have a lot of women joining that class, or is it mixed men and women? Would you say 50-50?
It's about 50-50, but there are honestly several times per week when my classes are all men.
Okay. Yeah, well, when the skills are good, when somebody wants to learn something, in my opinion, there's no difference if you get coached by a woman or by a man.
I completely agree.
And was it the beginning hard for you to get some ground on the martial arts scene, or make a name out of
yes.
that? Because a lot of men usually are very dominant in that area, and for women it's hard to get it.
That's very true, and yes, at the beginning I definitely really struggled. At the beginning, when I became a Krav Maga instructor especially, I feel like you are tested a lot. But after you, the way to answer that problem is, you know, there's always somebody in your class that wants to test your skill. They'll ask you, okay, so what if this happened? What would you do in this situation? And so you call them up to the front of the class. Well, why don't you come try that? And you allow them to try it, and you respond appropriately, and it checks them, and it shows everybody else that you know what you're talking about and that you have the authority in the room. Definitely has happened to me more than once. It has been a long time since that has happened to me, though.
Well, that just only speaks for yourself. But of course, I understand that people want to test if it's real what you learned there, because, as you know, probably a lot of martial arts schools, they teach a lot of bullshit and things are not working, especially on the street. And so it's only right as a student to ask the coach, is that really working? But I think you should not just ask the woman, also a man who teaches, and if that's good what you learn or not.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying that people shouldn't ask questions. They absolutely should ask questions. My point is more of people asking questions specifically to be problematic, specifically to try and dominate the situation, and it's not coming from a place of actually wanting to learn. There's a difference.
Yeah. So they basically want to test if that tiny woman there can also show something or is a good fighter. That's probably a typical move from a lot of men out there.
Yes, very much so.
And what is your training routine in general? Like, when do you train? How do you train? How often do you train?
It depends on what I'm trying to achieve at that point in time. Of course, your training before a test is always going to be different than just what you're going through on a regular basis. For me, I'm training usually about 6 days a week. That's not always martial arts. But just to keep physical, usually 6 days a week. And I've recently started to add a weight vest to my training, and it's definitely made a difference for me.
So you mix everything up with weights, martial arts, everything what you basically know, or different styles? Or do you have maybe some weeks where you only do kickboxing, and then the next week Krav Maga with Muay Thai, or just Muay Thai and lifting weights? But depends on your mood.
Yeah, a mixture, like you just said. And then I'm also actually trained to teach Legree. Do you know what Legree Fitness is?
No, that's what I wanted to ask you that because I saw that on your profile, and that's definitely a thing to ask.
It's actually growing quite a bit in Europe now as well. The man who created it is from France, but it's basically like Pilates on crack. It uses a machine that's called a Megaformer, and now they've just come out with a smaller, more portable machine called a Microformer. But it's all based on your own body weight and then spring tension. So it's all time under tension, and everything is a slow, controlled movement. So it's strength training, but it's much softer on the joints than lifting weights. But it's incredibly core heavy. So every move, basically every move you do, you're somehow stabilizing yourself with your abdomen.
So it's basically also like you would train in the water, very healthy for the joints, and you can still be explosive and do all kinds of movements, whatever you want to do.
Yes, that's accurate. But then there's also the resistance of the spring tension, which, depending on which spring or how many springs you have on, is going to be much more challenging than just the water.
Well, you do quite a lot, it seems like. Almost every sports activity is existing. Is there anything else you didn't do?
Yeah, there's lots I haven't done.
Like what? Like probably soccer, basketball.
I didn't play soccer. I did actually play basketball.
He's like you're completely fitness person, fitness addicted, right?
I've been very active most of my life. There was a brief period in time where I wasn't doing a whole lot, but as a very small child, I was competitive in sports.
Was there a specific reason why you wanted to do Krav Maga? You decided to do a Krav Maga self-defense, or was it just out of interest?
Like I said, I started teaching a kickboxing class at about 18, 19 years old, and I really loved it. And when I was asked to compete at the U.S. Women's Nationals Boxing Championship, it was from a boxing coach who had seen me training Muay Thai, and he approached me and asked me if he could train me, and he wanted me to go to nationals, and that's how that started. And I really enjoyed my Muay Thai training. And I've actually been to Israel on four different occasions. And I was there in 2006 when Hezbollah attacked, and actually filmed it because I was in journalism school at the time, for about 2.5 weeks. So I knew what Krav Maga was, because it's the official tactics of the Israeli Defense Force. But I never trained it while I was in Israel. But I already had the martial arts background. I'd already competed at the US Women's Nationals Boxing Championship. And I was interested in it. But I had a lot going on at that point in my life, and I hadn't gone and checked it out. So I had a tragedy happen in my family. I lost my older brother unexpectedly. And I had just graduated from college, and I moved back to Texas, which is where my mother lives. I'm not from there, but I have lived there. And that's not where my brother was when he passed away, but it's where my mother was. So I moved back to Texas, and at that point in time, I was going through personal crisis, and I had just graduated school, and I didn't have a job yet. And all I had on my hands was time, and that's very dangerous when you're in a bad place mentally. So I looked up. I knew I wanted to check out Krav Maga, and it seemed like the right time. So I went to the studio in San Antonio, Texas, and took a class. I took a trial class, and I signed up the day that I took the trial class. And then after training for about a month, the owner approached me and asked me to join the instructor training program. So that's where it all started. And what actually sold me on Krav Maga was one of the instructor trainings. Okay, the instructor trainings are different than how we teach our students, so I don't want to scare anybody right now who's interested in learning Krav Maga. You know, I'm not going to say that it's easy and you know there isn't contact, but instructor training is a different level than student training. And so instructor training, we're pretty brutal, and we had just learned, we were learning and practicing to teach choke against the wall. So what my partner was easily 100 pounds heavier than me. He was a big guy. And the old training facility in San Antonio had a mirror and then like gymnastics mats up against the mirror. So the walls were padded. So he grabbed me by my throat and shoved me up against the wall so hard that it actually shattered the glass behind the mat.
Oh, wow.
And he had me up on my toes. He was holding me up, my neck up on my toes, and I was able to get out of it. And that's when I was really, really sold on Krav Maga, because it worked. And he was so much bigger than me, and he wasn't taking it easy on me.
Yeah, but that's only right. If you want to have something that's working on the street, you need to have real training. And real training is the only way to, save yourself. Because a lot of people, as I said in the beginning, they go to these gyms or these fancy gyms where they handle everybody a black belt pretty easy, but they never really strike, or they do bullshit like, I punch, my hand is steady, and then you can trap my hand. But that's, as you know, not the way how it works.
Exactly. And we have a responsibility if we're teaching people something that could possibly save their life one day for it to actually work.
Yeah. And what is important for you, especially when you train people? Is there anything specific you look after?
Well, I mean, honestly, violence is always the last thing that we want, right? We're not going out and looking for fights.
Yeah.
So I really love to empower women, especially, and I want to teach awareness, just awareness of your surroundings, because that is often what gets us into problems, and to be assertive, because we are kind of conditioned from a very young age to not be rude. You know, and learn how to say no and draw a line for yourself. I think that's really important, because people that are looking to do bad things to other people prey on the weak. You know, they're looking for people that have their head down, looking at their cell phone, that walk like they're not confident, that aren't paying attention to their surroundings. So I think that's so important. And then, of course, to have the skill to back it up if something does happen.
Yeah. And in general, when you train your people just for fitness, what is important there for you? Anything specific?
Yes, definitely. I am I'm huge on modifying movements for your body. And I really want to drive it home that modifying isn't quitting. You know, you can keep going, even if you need to take a little break, or if you need to modify, like, you showed up, and that's, I just want to be encouraging. Like, I'm a little bit of a tough love, but it's definitely coming from a good place. Like, I yell, but I'm not yelling at my students. I'm yelling to raise the energy in the room and keep people going.
Yeah, but that's, in my opinion, also the only way to do that, or the best way, because that's what people sometimes need when they feel, okay, shit, the last two repetitions, I feel like I can't do it. But then when you shout at me and say, come on, let's do that, that helps. And then suddenly I get not just two reps, suddenly I can do four, you know, because I'm so fired up. And I do two more extra just because you look at me.
Yes, and I'm the same way. I I can do my own workouts, and I often do, but if given the choice, I would much rather be in a group situation, with an instructor. I just, that's how I want to train, and I want to give my students and my instructor candidates as well the best possible experience.
Yeah, I think it's definitely right what you do. And you also mentioned the bounce back. So it's on your Instagram for the people when they want to look later. Tell people a little bit about that, because it's not like a normal sandbag.
No, so I'm involved with this company called Baobag, and it's a freestanding heavy bag that's different than anything else that's on the market. We're in the process of getting everything up and running, but we're getting closer and closer every day. And I've been hired to be the face of it and run the fitness aspect of it. So it's a freestanding heavy bag that solves a lot of the problems that current freestanding heavy bags on the market give us. So most fighters will want to train on a hanging heavy bag. There's just a lot of benefit to it. Most of them won't want to train on a freestanding bag. But for the sake of space, and especially in the current situation the world is in right now, being able to move a bag around is a huge benefit. Most freestanding bags have water bases, meaning, it's plastic and then you fill it with water and they crack and leak, so that's one problem that they give. They don't have a very long shelf life. They are difficult to move because once you've filled that base with water, it's heavy and you can only really tilt it over and kind of roll it. And they are easy to knock over, especially
That's
for
true, yeah.
people that are stronger. Most people can kick them over. So there's a lot of issues there, and this bag is the same, out bag is going to be the same height and weight as a hanging heavy bag. And the base has a couple of cool things going on with it. There are wheels that are elevated on the side, so you can tilt it over. The wheels aren't touching the ground, but you have to tilt it over, and then you can roll it like a dolly. So it's very easy to move around. There's a handle on top. So even though it's heavy, it's very portable and it rolls very easily. The other thing going on with the base is that there are eyelets, they call them O-rings, that are meant for resistance training. So you can hook up resistance bands very easily and battle ropes as well. So it's really meant for circuit training. And then eventually, we are going to be having technology put into it that tells you, gives feedback and data, so you'll know how hard and fast you punch. And then we're going to be pairing it and gamifying the workout, essentially. So that's really exciting.
Well, wow, that's very good. It sounds definitely way better than most sandbags because I see, like you, I mean, a sandbag, there's nothing wrong with that. But first of all, when you strike, they move all the time. And then sometimes when you're reading the flow, you have to wait until the sandbag is at least a little bit back so you can fire the next shots. And a lot of them are still too light. Of course, the really heavy sandbags, the 220 plus sandbags, the thick ones who are steady on the ground, with them, it's a little bit different. But also you have a problem with uppercuts, and that's why some people and you, I know you follow Bas Rutten as well, the body action system, you have uppercuts there, which is perfect. And yeah, it seems like your sandbag definitely gives a great solution.
Yeah, we're really excited. They're being produced as we speak, actually, and then the technology will come later.
And when we speak about a heavy sandbag, how heavy is it, or what's the maximum you can have? 220, or is it lighter or heavier?
No, oh, I forgot to mention that it's not, the base isn't filled with water, otherwise you wouldn't be able to have the axle for the wheels. So it has sand. And
Okay.
it would be shipped hollow, and then filled with just sand. But it's about 220 pounds.
Well, that's perfect. That's for most people who are heavy hitters or heavy kickers is really, really good, because to really knock that down to 20, you definitely need a crazy power.
Yes. And actually, I forgot one other thing about the base, is that there are retractable kind of kickstands on the side. So
that's
they're
good.
Tucked up and in. And with those tucked up and in and not out, a large man who is skilled in fighting could possibly kick it over with a front kick. Okay, you wouldn't be able to kick it over with a round kick. But with a front kick, a very large, skilled, trained man could kick it over with a front kick, but he'd have to use all his power. With the kickstands out, you can't kick it over with a front kick or a round kick or any kick.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to kick it over.
That's great. So that would be perfect for me and all the people who like to kick a lot, because that's the most annoying thing when you have a sandbag or these, you know, these bobs. When you kick them and they fall over and you have to pick them up all the time, it's definitely really, really annoying.
Absolutely, I agree. Oh, and also it's foam, so it's really nice to punch. Like, just the feedback you get from it, it's very gratifying and not damaging to your.
That's perfect. And is there also an app to that sandbag or something?
There will be.
With?
There will
okay.
be. That's going to come when the technology comes.
Okay, perfect.
There absolutely will be, though.
Yeah, and also because we spoke about that people want you to be the face of that, of the company. You also did, model shooting, or yeah, were in a competition for Maxim cover. Is that right? Tell the people
yes.
a little bit about that.
Yes, that was about a year ago now. I honestly had no intention of competing, but I had just had some photos done and I saw the contest and I decided to go for it. It was an experience, and it's very public because it was all voter based. So I had to really, really put myself out there and ask for daily votes. We needed people to vote every single day, and it was definitely interesting, but also a good experience. I made it to the finals, which was never really a
pretty
thought.
Far, yeah.
Yeah, I there was over 20,000 women in the contest, and I made it to the top 16.
Wow. And how was that experience for you? Because I can imagine I also have a friend, and she competed for the Women's Health magazine for that cover. It's basically the same, but that was a little bit weird with the voting, because you had the Facebook votes, and there was also for the Wounded Warriors. So that means if somebody donates there, and then they can have more votes. And was it the same, or was it just one vote every day?
It was actually the exact same format.
Which
so,
that's I don't like that.
Yeah, I competed right after the Maxim contest ended. There was another contest that was the exact same format, and it's not surprising because magazines need money, and I understand that. So I wasn't surprised to see the Women's Health do that. I won't ever do one again. But right after Maxim ended, there was one that I saw for Jet Set magazine, which is a magazine I honestly had not even heard of. But the prize was more than double what Maxim was giving out. And so I hopped right into another contest. And I was exhausted. When it was done, I was just completely depleted and exhausted. From social media and from calling people. I mean, it was literally another full-time job. Calling people, asking people for donations, writing emails, just making posts every day, like actually, personally messaging people every day. It was a lot. So I ended up going for the Jet Set one. I was really on the fence about it, quite honestly. I was pretty much over it. But my friends really encouraged me because they were like, look how good you did in the Maxim contest. Like, you've already got that. People are already in the groove. Everybody was rooting for you. Like, just do it. So I hopped right into another contest, and I made it to the finals in that contest as well. Wow. But I won't do one again. So once that one was done, I actually saw the one for the women's health, and I saw that it was the exact same format, and I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, I didn't like the way it is, because the thing is this, if it's just one vote every day, and let's say they do one special with two votes a day every week, that's okay. But with the Facebook votes, a lot of people didn't like that because people said they don't want to have Facebook just for that. That's one thing. And also with the donation, and it was like, then, yeah, sometimes you can have until 100 votes if you donate a certain amount of money. And it's a little bit then unfair. And also, in my opinion, it depends a lot on the skills. And when you look at the people competing and you see clearly that person who you support is skill-wise and physically from the look the best, but then she will still lose because of these donations. It's annoying.
It comes down to money, which is the unfortunate part about it, because exactly to your point, it's not necessarily about who's the right fit and who, you know, it's about who has the supporters that are willing to shell out the most money.
Yeah. But still, you came pretty far. I mean, being in the final for your first time and not really knowing the magazine is pretty impressive. And for the people out there, when they will check your Instagram later, you have a great account, a lot of great pictures, and your shape is amazing. And I really like the split pick you did.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if it was for the magazine or if you just did it for your Instagram, but that one was really good.
Thank you. That was for Strike Fit, actually. That was for my kickboxing program. But also the Jet Set, the second competition that I did back to back, I actually, I made it to finals as well, but there was well over 30,000 women in that contest. So I was the top, I ended up being in the top 1%.
Wow, that's still very, very impressive. And did you have any rules how you have to do the pictures, or was it just you can do whatever picture you want?
There was no nudity. And that was basically the only rule. But I saw some very questionable things. So I'm not sure how much they really enforced that. And that was really the unfortunate part too, especially towards the end of the Maxim contest. It was very obvious to me that there was some very shady things going on. So that's why I was so hesitant to jump right into the second one. But
can you explain it a little bit more in the details? I mean, now it's over. I don't think you get any punishment from that.
Oh, sure. There was one girl in particular who was bullying other contestants.
Oh, that's shit.
I became friends with some of the girls that I competed against. And we're still friends to this day. And we actually ended, a couple of them experienced this girl in a negative way. She was racist. She was just belittling. She made comments about people's age. She was just out of control and just a hideous person. She ended up being one of the top two, and she did not win, which we were all very happy about.
Yeah. That's a punishment then.
Yeah. So what exactly happened? With the bot votes, one of my friends did a rather large sum for me at the round that I got cut, and they didn't count my votes. And she knew that because she got the credit card statement. She got charged for it because she did the votes on two different credit cards. So she got the notification on both credit cards that she'd been charged the amount. Mm-hmm. And then she got an email from them when she did the votes saying that the vote didn't go through, even though it was before the session, before the round closed. And it was a large amount of votes. And I was up and down for first and second, so we know it was close, right? And they didn't count them, but they charged her. So she fought it from her credit card company, and she won from her credit card company, and she asked the contest for a vote count, and they told her that it was the smaller amount, even though she paid for the larger amount. And they wouldn't give me the votes, even though she paid for it, they charged her, and it was done before the round closed. So I really don't actually believe I was cut that round, but then, you know, there's nothing you can do because they run it.
Yeah.
And that's how they run it.
Yeah. That's pretty sad because I had, a friend of mine, she's a doctor, Christy Ennis, shout out to her if she listens to that. Basically, she was, when I see all these people competing, in my opinion, she had the best physique and also the most knowledge and everything in the pictures. Everything was so perfect. But yeah, that's a pretty cheap way of running these contests, because then you can have a friend who pays for that month or how long that is, 10K every time. And then you win, of course, because the person donates all the time money. And that's not really a skill, or it's not really who is the best, who looks the best. And yeah, it's definitely not good.
No, it's, and it's hard work too. It's really hard work to promote yourself in that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially for the Maxim contest where the prize was only $20,000,
mm-hmm.
I guarantee you the winner has paid more than $20,000 to win that contest.
Yeah, I think so too, because that's pretty much nothing with all the work done. And when you have the contract and the photo shoots and whatever. But would you say it was still a good experience for you, like picture-wise? You have some great pictures then because of that, connecting with people maybe. Yeah.
Well, the pictures themselves were a present to myself for my birthday. So I didn't take the pictures for the contest. The contest happened because I had the pictures.
Oh, okay.
But it was a good experience in the fact that I had no idea how much support I had. I had no idea how many people were rooting for me. Like it was amazing to me. And really, like, when I would read the notes that people would send when they were doing donations for me and for the Wounded Warriors, who I volunteer for every year, by the way. So that's actually something that's close to my heart, even though the magazine kept more than they really advertise. It was so incredible to read the notes and messages that I would get. And it was overwhelming, honestly, to the point of tears at times.
Well, if somebody is special, has some special skills or something special to offer, that's the way how people are. And you deserve all the support, so you can be happy.
Thank you.
And to wrap the podcast up with something positive, a little bit away from the bad vibes of the shooting of the cover. Anything else you want to tell the people there, or some advices for the women, especially regards of martial arts?
I feel very strongly that every woman should learn some martial arts, and even if it's not something that you're interested in doing on a regular basis or training on a regular basis, I really would like to implore all women out there to at least take a seminar, like a 2-hour self-defense seminar, because it really is so empowering. And, you know, the first thing you hear from people that have been a victim of whatever kind of violence, are two things, actually. You hear, "I never thought it would happen to me, and I didn't know what to do." So just taking a a one-day self-defense course. Of course, you're not going to learn everything there is to know.
True, you
know,
yeah.
I don't know everything there is to know, and I've been training for years and years and years, and teaching for years and years and years. But just experiencing that is going to give the self-confidence to know that you will at least fight back if something happens, and give you a very baseline skill set to know what to do.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Everybody should learn self-defense or should do martial arts, as also a lot of people say, and great coaches, they force their kids from 3 to 16 into martial arts, whether they like it or not. Like Ray Thompson, Stephen Wonderboy's dad, he said that. And I definitely agree. It's only benefits about martial arts.
Yeah, and it teaches discipline as well. So that's definitely great for the young ones too.
Yeah, then I think we can wrap that podcast up. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to do, hopefully, another podcast with you in the future.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. And it was nice chatting with you. And absolutely, let's do it again.
Anytime. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you too.
That's it from the Martial Arts Show 2.0. I'm your podcast host, Khalid. And my guest today was Rachel Greenbaum. And we had a great time talking about her martial arts, Krav Maga, the bout back, and many, many more things. I hope you enjoyed that. Bye, everybody.